I always love it when Jesus ends a parable with, "Whoever has ears, let them hear." Like you were going to do something else with them. Yeah. Listen. Listening is very important. And if you were paying attention, I'm sure y'all have that great memory. You know that last Sunday's gospel lesson ended with that same phrase. Whoever has ears, let them hear. I like, have any of you ever read the or seen the Cotton Patch Gospel? Clem Sterton, that good Southern piece. He has two different renderings for the saying of Jesus. One is, "Let that soak in." But then my favorite is, "Let that percolate through." So listen, listen. Speaking of listening, I got a birthday card from my sister this year I wanted to share with you. I'm not sure you can see it there, but you see Jesus sitting there teaching. And what the card says is, "Okay, everyone, now listen carefully. I don't want to end up with four different versions of this." She's a character. But we do have four different gospels that allow us to encounter Jesus from four different perspectives, from four different writers who arrange their materials to say something specific in their gospel. And so we don't want a blended gospel of all of them together, but you need each individual gospel writer. And this is the year of Matthew. Our gospel lessons are primarily from Matthew. We have three cycles, a 3-year cycle. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John sprinkled through all of them. More sprinkled in B, a year two, probably because Mark is a shorter gospel. But I wasn't there when they did it, or there'd be 4 years. There'd be a 4-year cycle because I think John should have his own year. But in the 80s, some of you may remember, or maybe you saw an ad for it, Nashika, which was a Japanese camera manufacturer, made the Nashika N800. It had four lenses across the front of the camera. And it was a 35-millimeter camera, and it took pictures that would be developed 3D. Because that image came in onto the film from four different directions. And it didn't catch on because there was only one place in the whole world that they could be developed. And people just did not want to wait that long for a gimmick. But in a very similar way, we've got that three-dimensional image of Jesus because we have it from the different gospels. And Matthew is unique in his presentation of the gospel. And that's one of the things I wanted to point out today. He has a unique structure. I think Matthew may have been a German engineer in that everything is presented in a very orderly fashion. And he has Jesus teach in five different discourses. And in those discourses, the subject matter, belongs there. You're familiar with the Sermon on the Mount. That would be the first discourse. The last discourse would be the Olivet discourse. That has all the teachings about the end of time. But our parable today comes from the third of these discourses. And what was nice about the way Matthew laid it out is that things that go together are together. All of Jesus' teachings on prayer are in the same place. It's great. All of the teachings about the end time in the same place. And you'll see today how it works in that it helped with memorization. People could run down to the corner store and get a Bible. I need a copy of Matthew, please. You could memorize it though. His was easier to memorize because everything's there. It was good for catechetical instruction as well. Our gospel reading this morning contains that parable of the what we call the wheat and the tares. Although nobody uses the word tares anymore, I don't know why that's still a heading. It's wheat and weeds. Or I would do it, wheat and wicked weeds. You have those weeds? Okay. It's traditionally known as the tare, but nobody knows what a tare is, so let's don't use that. But it comes from it's called the parabolic discourse. It begins in this chapter. And the parable that came just before this was the parable of the sower, you know, with the four different types of soil where he cast the seed. And then you move into an explanation of that one. And then you come into this one and you have an explanation. But between the parable and the explanation, you have some other parables. You have the parable of the mustard seed and yeast. These are parables. You can clump them together because you're thinking of seeds or of things growing. And so they all fit. They all fit. And that's nice. It's easy to memorize. Easy to memorize. But I found out this week it can be confusing to some people. I left my water over here. You throw it to me. Claritin does that. Dries you out. But I do so love breathing. But what people do, or some, I noticed, they conflate these stories. They run them together. They take a meaning from the first one and try to impose it into the second. It gets confusing. And one of the things I love to do is read other sermons. And so this week I read a bunch of them, and I know I read at least five sermons on this parable of the wheat and the weeds that draw, and I mean this in the most loving way, they were good sermons, but incorrect interpretations of the parable. They were still preaching the truth. They were still preaching the gospel. They just weren't preaching the parable they were using. And I'm sure I've done something just as bad or worse. But part of the problem is, and this is true for extemporaneous preachers, they preach verse by verse as they move through scripture. And that's fine. Except that the parable comes first, and you're a long way from the interpretation of this particular parable. And so while they're preaching, they're not preaching on the interpretation. And I've always felt like, well, since Jesus interpreted, I mean, really? Can we stray from that?
I don't think so.
I mean, I'm not going to come up with, no, Jesus was wrong, but this is what that parable means. And they wouldn't say that either. But I'll give you an example. I said there were at least five sermons I read that had this as their theme, that both good and evil exist side by side in the church. That's true. That's true. They do. And they even said, they'd go further and say, you know, the weed in this particular parable is indistinguishable from the wheat. And it's a pretender. And a lot of people in the church are pretenders. And that's all well and good, but it's not what the parable's about. It would be what the parable is about if the field, in Jesus' interpretation, was the church. It is not. In the interpretation, Jesus said the field is the world. I heard several and read several sermons that talked about the evil and the good that's within each of our hearts. I preached on that a couple of weeks ago from Romans. It's true, and there's gospel there, but it's not what the parable is about. Because Jesus isn't talking about the field as our heart. It doesn't represent our hearts. It represents the world. And I think one of the greatest things about this parable and the parable of the sower that comes before it is that Jesus gave an explanation for each one of them. And that's great because that very much limits my freedom of interpretation and makes coming up with the sermon so much easier. So long as I'm within the parameters that Jesus set on that interpretation, I'm going to be okay. But for a moment, let's back off from the interpretation and go back up to the parable proper. And let's look at the story as Jesus told it. Jesus began, "The kingdom of heaven is like a man who sowed good seed in his field." And so, strictly speaking, this parable is about a man. The kingdom, it's about the kingdom. The kingdom is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. And the man, in the interpretation, Jesus identifies as the Son of Man. Who is?
Jesus.
He's the sower. He sowed the field with good seed. And Jesus says that good seed, those are the people of the kingdom. That's you. That's me. We are sown into that field. But under cover of darkness, according to the parable, an enemy comes and sows weeds. When the wheat sprouted, formed heads, then it became obvious what had happened. I'm sure that most of you have heard of the weed. So many sermons. Darnell is the name of the weed. It looks identical to wheat. You can't differentiate until the head appears. And then it's really easy because the wheat, they point up. You see them. They point upward. And they're golden. And the darnel points at about a 45 degree downward, and they're very dark. But up until that point, they're indistinguishable. But once that head sprouts, you know what the issue is, and it's too late. The other thing that's made known in this parable is that this happened intentionally. This wasn't just the random weeds that come up in your garden. Someone came and sowed them in the garden. I've accused neighbors of doing that when I have a garden, but where do these things come from? Now, when I was about 11 years old, I grew up on a farm. That's why I went to college. I'm never going to hold a hoe in my hand again. But at the age of 11, you know, there were five kids in the family. We each had our own hoe. And just like magic, if you happened to break your hoe, Dad could fix it. Put a new handle on it just like that. So that didn't work. But he sent me out one day to take care of the weeds and the okra. Easy enough task. Now, if Dad ever gave us a class on differentiating between the weed called cockle burr and okra, I missed the class. They are identical in the early stages. The leaves, they look interchangeable. And I know that I took out at least 50 feet of okra, but had a nice straight row of cockleburr. And then that was when Dad told me, that I meant for you to go between the rows. We'll take care of that later because we'll have to thin it out anyway. So, you know, you learn, but there are mistakes. But this was not a mistake. an enemy did this. And so the servants asked the man, do you want us to go and pull him up? And the man, made the decision to allow them to grow together. Allowed them to grow together. And you know, if you pull up, there's going to be collateral damage. If you pull up the weed, you're going to pull up wheat with it. Wait till the harvest. I'll tell the harvesters, separate them. Bundle the weeds to be burned, and we'll put the good wheat in my barn. It's the good wheat. Children of the kingdom, wicked wheat, children of Satan. In this parable, when we include the interpretation that Jesus gave, we have to realize that the man made the determination that in his kingdom, in his field, the wheat and the weeds were going to grow side by side. This parable, despite what people want it to say, is dealing with the age-old, unanswerable problem of evil. Evil exists. And ask, why is there evil in the world? It's almost the same question they asked him. Where did the weeds come from? Everyone wants to ask that question of God. Probably the first question we want to ask him when we get there. Why did you allow the evil to be side by side with your children in the kingdom, in the world? Everyone wants to know. Jesus does not answer this question, but he does acknowledge the question. He does acknowledge that it's an issue for people. And theologians and philosophers have wrestled with it for millennia. And the answer they've come up with is no one knows. Read the book of Job. Job wants to know. God doesn't tell him. The answer is, I'm God and you're not. It's beyond our comprehension. Like the psalmist today say, that knowledge is just too far beyond me. Now, the problem of evil, traditionally, I'll sum it up for you. Very briefly, what the problem is for people is that there are attributes that God has that we talk about, and three of them are always mentioned in this debate over good and evil. One, God is all-knowing, omniscient, is what we call it. God is all-knowing, and so he knows how evil works. He knows what's going on. But it's going on anyway. God is all loving. And this is a good word, put it on a shirt. Omnibenevolent. All benevolent. God is all loving. And yet, despite the fact that God's all loving, there's evil in the world. And bad things happen. And the third one, God is all powerful. Omnipotent. God can do as God wills. So then why does evil exist? All three of those statements are true, but because it makes it almost like, so, well, they're almost contradictory. They're not. How do we find the answer? Well, I'll give you a clue. It's not in this sermon today. I I cannot account for the existence of evil. I can't clear that up for you. And Jesus doesn't clear it up. He says, an enemy has done this. We're not told why the man, the Son of Man, allowed it and allows it. God is all-knowing. He wasn't taken by surprise. It doesn't say in the parable that the man woke up and looked at his field and said, oh my goodness, where did those weeds come from? He knew. God is all-knowing. Never taken by surprise. Even when things happen in the dark. I don't have an answer. But there are some truths that I know that have helped me deal with the evil I've encountered in the world. And I've seen my fair share. I choose not to look at the issue of what God can and cannot do, because that's way above my pay grade. And as I read people writing, philosophers and theologians writing about what God can and cannot do, really what it boils down to is what they can comprehend, not what God can do or not do. I choose to look at the issue in a different way. I want to look at the things that I know God is doing. The things that God does in my life, the things that God does in other people's lives. I can see that. I know that. I can discern that. And I've learned some things that you will know these. I honestly believe that God desires from me and from you that we be in a loving relationship with Him and walk with Him. I know that. And I can do that to the best of my ability. I can walk with God in the relationship. And I know you all have heard, from time to time, we actually do have sermons about the relationship. We usually point it out. This one's not, but it mentions it in passing. Because it's important, that relationship. And know this, that for it to be a truly loving relationship, for me to truly love God, I have to be able not to. I have to be able. I have to have enough free will to decide that I will completely reject God. If I don't have that freedom, then my love is not genuine. God cannot command us to love Him and force us to do it. We have to come to God and love Him. And in order for it to be true love, I have to have the ability to reject His love, to reject His teachings, and to reject His kingdom. I have to have free will, or the love's not genuine. And that the necessity of genuine love and that free will that that requires opens the door or the enemy. So where does that leave us this morning? Well, it leaves us firmly rooted in the field of the world where Jesus has sown us. That's where we are. We're here and we are face to face with our roots intertwined with children of the evil one. We encounter them every day. We're all in the same field of the world. And we're so close in this world that we're right up in each other's business. But there's some good news. Some good news in this. Jesus tells us in this parable that there will be judgment. In the end, justice, truth, love, peace, the kingdom will prevail. And we'll be in his barn. There's also some good news in that the time has not yet come. The time of judgment is not here. There is still hope for the wicked weeds. And I'll leave you with this thought. Let that percolate through. Amen.
Here's what I found.